Rowan Radio, 89.7 WGLS FM proudly presents the Rowan Sports Review, a weekly program that brings you up to date on all the exciting news of Rowan University athletics, including recaps and highlights, player and coach interviews, and a preview of upcoming games. And now, here's your host, Rowan Radio Sports Director, Jack Miller.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Rowan Sports Review. I'm your host, Jack Miller. Aiden Dougherty with me today, as well as a new voice of the Rowan Sports Review, but a typical voice on Rowan Radio, Tom Hill. Welcome, guys. Welcome back, Doc, and welcome for your first time, Tom. We're going to be talking about Rowan softball and Rowan baseball today, but we're going to start off with the softball team, who've been on an absolute tear since the beginning of the season, or since the beginning of their time back in Glassboro, since their Florida trip has ended. Currently on an 11-game win streak, and they've just been on an absolute tear, 17-5 overall so far on the season. Riley Lutz had a no-hitter, Emily McCutcheon on the Pitcher of the Year watch list, and their bats are hot as ever, and it's just all-around greatness for the softball team right now. We'll start with you, Doc. I mean, this softball team's kind of, you could say, untouchable on either side.
Yeah, I mean, again, you mentioned the great pitching. Lutz and McCutcheon have become this 1-2 combination that is just scary, and they proved it last year that they can pitch in big games, and they look even better this year than they were last year. And they did look beatable at the beginning of the year, right? I mean, They won the first two at home, then they had that nice little Florida trip, and they struggled just a little bit. And I believe they were actually under 500 at one point. I mean, they've won 11 in a row. I mean,
they actually weren't. They were at 500. They were 2-2 because they lost two straight after the SUNY Oneida doubleheader sweep, and they lost to number two Salisbury two games in a row.
Yeah, but they were 6-5 at one point, and you felt like that's for a program as good as they are and a team coming off a World Series appearance, you're like, that's a little disappointing. But then they've just ripped off 11 wins in a row, and they look like the clear best team in the end, Jack, as well, if you just go off what we kind of have seen so far from both end Jack teams. And I think that they could just completely cook on this NJAC schedule to end the year, because if anything, I think a lot of their hard games are out of the way. I mean, you mentioned Salisbury. I think even teams like Swarthmore is good. Case Western Reserve, like, those are probably the best teams they're going to play this year. Now they're playing NJAC opponents where they typically dominate year in and year out. Last year, sadly, they weren't able to bring home the NJAC title, but I think if they look unbeatable and untouchable, especially compared to their running mates in the NJAC conference.
But, Tom, you knew that because they have also coach, Hall of Fame coach, Kim Wilson, in the dugout helping this team out just thrive at a 17-5 record, that you knew that there was going to be a win streak that started to brew at some point. It was just a matter of when.
It's just a matter of when, and I think, as you mentioned, Jack, Lutz and McCutcheon on the mound, they're able to kind of shorten those games. And obviously in softball, you don't really worry about the bullpen necessarily, but you know that the offense eventually gets going and turns these 7-inning games into 5-inning games because of how well they play throughout the first 5 innings. And as Doc mentioned, a lot of their easy games are coming up. They're 4-0 at home so far this season. They've got 2 against NJCU tomorrow. Then on Sunday, 2 against William Patterson at home. NJCU is below 500. William Patterson is actually still winless on the season. And then they play 2 at home against Stockton at Ramapo. Eventually, they get in to more NJAC opponents on the road. But I think this team is just absolutely loaded. Their lineup, top to bottom, is unbelievable. Melvin, Kat Thomas, Liz McCaffrey, Zara McNair, who's a freshman, is starting to get real legitimate playing time, and she's looked pretty good so far. And they also have some new players like Brooke McGuigan and Morgan Tripati, who just add another layer to an already stacked lineup. And you don't need a lot of runs when you have Lutz and McCutcheon on the mound, but when they do get those runs, they win these games, and they win them pretty handedly. And early on in the season, it was a little bit tough, especially with offensive consistency, but they've really kind of righted their early season struggles and have looked like the dominant team that we all pegged them to be coming into this season.
Yeah, and with the hitting side of things for the softball team, they have two batters that are both over 400 batting average, both Mackenzie Melvin as well as Peyton McNair. Liz McCaffrey almost at 400. She's at 385, but they have a lot of consistent hitters as well with Kat Thomas, Grace Shakaitis, Caitlin Riggs getting involved, stuff that you like to see. But we're going to switch over to the pitching side of things because Riley Lutz did win Pitcher of the Week last week, and most likely she'll be pitching today against Kane. But it's crazy to see now, Doc, that comparing it from last year to this year, you would see that Riley Lutz would have a consistent year, and she is, but the fact that Emily McCutchen is having a better year than Riley Lutz, that's hard to do. 1.36 ERA for McCutchen compared to Lutz's 1.64, just basing it off ERA numbers at this point. But McCutchen only has one loss. Riley Lutz has four. Riley Lutz also has six wins compared to McCutchen's 11. McCutchen has a very solid case to be pitcher of the year in all of D3.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the fact that we're even having a conversation of who is better just shows how good this team can be because they're both so good, and you mentioned both sub-2 ERAs, both just kind of always on cruise control. Neither pitcher has imploded yet this season, even just a little bit. It's ridiculous, honestly, how good both of them are. I mean, we saw it last year from Emily McCutchen. She was very good when she was pitching, you know, the second game of the doubleheader. She was able to, you know, just allow two runs, six innings, you know, and then the offense would score like eight and you'd win the game with ease. But now she's becoming if we're going against a top 10 team in the nation, I mean, there's a good chance she doesn't allow a run or just allows one run. I mean,
yeah.
And your offense, the job is just so much easier for this offense. And also, obviously, shout out to the defense as well for keeping these ERAs down as, you know, very limited errors. Just a lot of good plays out there defensively. They have a lot of talented defenders all across the infield and all across the outfield. But the pitching is just, it's something special. I mean, even like their whip is down. Like they're not allowing many base runners, which is, you know, D3 softball, I mean, typically there's a good amount of walks.
Yeah, team whip of 1.14. So
that's very good. Because, again, like I said, in D3, there's typically walks. You know, strike zones are kind of pretty strict. But it doesn't matter to Riley Lutz and Emily McCutchen. They're both going to keep racking up awards, whether that's NJAC Player of the Week, whether that's Pitcher of the Year, like, you know, they're going to keep getting it, and they're fighting against each other.
Yeah.
A little friendly competition.
Yeah, and Riley Lutz did win NJAC Pitcher of the Year, and she has that in her resume. And, Tom, it's great for Rowan to have this two-headed monster be as dominant as they are. And last year, they were able to get to Marshall, Texas, all the way to the College World Series. Where do you see the ceiling for this softball team? Do you think they can get back there?
Oh, 100%. If anything, they seem like a better team even last year because of, as Doc alluded to, Emily McCutchen has just gotten better as a pitcher, and she was great last year, and Lutz was obviously phenomenal a season ago, but you can even make the case that both of them have gotten a lot better than they were a season ago, and as you mentioned, Jack, with the hitters and McCaffrey and Melvin and Peyton McNair, Kat Thomas, that lineup, pretty much 1 through 9, they know how to get it done offensively. And there are some times where they go into some offensive lulls, but I would be very, very, very shocked if they are not back late May, early June, playing in Texas and competing for a chance at a World Series, a softball championship World Series. So this team, the sky's the limit. They are absolutely loaded. Pitching, hitting, defense, they have it all.
And with the offense, it's actually not bad, but you guys are saying that there is there's some stagnant hitting from the softball team. I mean, I see it as kind of, I would say, it's there, you know, like it's consistent in a sense, but where do you guys see the holes? I'll ask both of you. Where do you guys see the holes in the offense? Because to you guys, it seems like there's more holes in the offense compared to their pitching.
I mean, I think The holes is obviously, like, you always look at the bottom of the order, and they're just trying to figure out what the starting nine should be. Like, if they had game one of the World Series tomorrow, it seems like they don't know what their starters would be outside, obviously, like, the main five, six players. And I think that's really where the holes are. It's almost like they got a good amount of depth, which is good, but there's a lot of players close to each other, and you're like, who do we trust in big moments? And I think that's just kind of where it falls. I mean, it's been a good year. Caitlin Riggs has, you know, stepped in at catcher for Corey Hagen, has done a solid job. Obviously, I think you kind of expected a little bit of a fall off from, you know, Corey Hagen, who was just pretty unbelievable the last couple of years, at least for this season. Mm-hmm. Caitlin Riggs obviously starting consistently for her first season. There's also, again, they're trying to see if Zara McNair is going to be a freshman that they can have consistently give play time. I mean, she started 13 games already. And I think they're also probably just looking for more production from Brianna Bryant, because I think she was one of their best hitters last year. And I think she just went through a little bit of a slump even during this own win streak. But if she picks it up, I mean, again, they have like six of the best hitters in the whole conference, let alone, you know, out of the conference.
Do you agree with Doc?
I would agree, and I would also agree with his lineup point, because early in the season they had Brianna Bryant kind of hit five hole, and now they dropped her down to nine. Early on, we saw a lot of Grace Shikaitis, obviously the senior, and now we've seen more Zara McNair out in right field. Zara McNair has actually been moved up towards the top of the lineup, actually hitting in the two hole sometimes. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, as Doc mentioned, as the season starts to progress. I would assume they would round out that bottom of the lineup with Tripodi, Pawlowski, and Bryant, or maybe you move Bryant up if she starts hitting a little bit more. Bryant's numbers on the season are still good. It's just not as unbelievably potent as five or six of her teammates, which is a good problem to have, because it just is a testament to this team and how dominant they are, a lot of them at the plate. But I do think their bread and butter is on the mound with both Lutz and McCutchen, and just their way to shorten games and minimize damage. And with Lutz, it's strikeouts. McCutchen, it's efficiency, getting ground balls, and, you know, getting the defense involved. It's different styles of pitching, but they're both very effective.
Now, last question for either of you, or for both of you, doesn't matter. I feel like it's a very similar narrative this year that the Profs are projected to win the NJAC from this year to last year. Last year, they weren't able to get over that hump. Both TCNJ and Ramapo had answers for them in the NJAC tournament. How do they get over that hump in the NJAC? Something that, well, at least for this year, is haunting them a little bit, because they want revenge and they want to get that title back in Glassboro. And they really want to win it again.
I think one thing you might have to sacrifice to win the NJAC is try not to burn out Riley Lutz and Emily McCutchen, because it felt like in the NJAC, and then as they moved on, it was kind of just like they looked exhausted, like the arms were looked a little exhausted because they were pitching like every other day and they're pitching complete games. And it felt like a lot of times it'd be the sixth, seventh inning, and all of a sudden you start seeing, you know, the bats wake up for the other team, and then they come back, and the offense obviously wasn't that great in the NJAC tournament last year either. So they really didn't have any wiggle room. And it felt like the pitchers were just getting a little tired towards the end. And that was both Lutz and McCutchen. And they kept trying to count on them. And I think maybe, you know, not really, it's not sacrificing a game, but it's if you just, you know, let them have an off day. Because, look, they have a doubleheader both today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be... it's going to be tough to keep pitching these close games when they're so close to each other with no rest days or very little rest days. And I think you might have to just sacrifice, you know, not having them, one of them or both of them, pitch on the same day, and just see if, you know, Veronica Good could get you a good amount of outs, no pun intended. but, you know, and just try to see if you can buy innings from others, because it's, I mean, Cat Thomas, I believe, is listed as a pitcher on the depth chart. I mean, hey, let's see if she can rip it a little bit.
The only issue is, Tom, is that Veronica Good has only appeared two times this season. So how do you think they get her involved when her ERA is already at a 14?
It would be interesting to see if maybe they decide to pitch, as Doc mentioned, either Lutz or McCutchen, maybe the last two innings in a blowout game where maybe you're playing one of these weaker NJAC opponents or just weaker opponents in general, and you have Veronica Good pitch the first three innings, and then maybe you have Riley Lutz pitch the next two in very low leverage spots where she just gets, you know, 15 to about 20 pitches in about two innings of work, and the game is out of hand. It's 9-0, or I guess 7-0, or 9-3, whatever, and she can just get like another inning or two, and it's kind of the same deal with McCutchen. I would expect Veronica Good to at least get more innings, just because, as Doc mentioned, Lutz and McCutchen, as great as they are, they can only go so far, and pitching can only take you so far. And to his point as well, last year in the NJAC, they scored one run in their win against William Patterson, two in their win against Stockton. The loss to TCNJ, they lost 4-0. So the problem is the offense come NJAC time, at least for last season. Their bread and butter, as we've been mentioning so far on this podcast, is their pitching. And you want to keep your pitching as safe and as ready to go as possible, because that's how you're going to win these games.
Great points, guys. And we're going to talk about the baseball season and their successful season so far that they've had, as well as the softball team. We'll be right back. You're tuned into the Rowan Sports Review. Again, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rowan Sports Review. If you're just tuning in, we just talked about the Rowan softball team and their successes, but we're going to swing over to the other successes of the baseball team. It is a great season so far for the baseball team, dominating the entire league. 13-4. They're 2-1 at home, 2-1 on the road, 9-2 when they were out in Florida. And let's start with the hitting. Phil Sedalis, man, who would have thought that he would have had a leap year like he had? 465 batting average in the 16 starts that he's produced, in with 7 doubles, 2 triples, 6 home runs as well, with 25 RBIs. Arguably, maybe undeniably, one of the best hitters on this team, Tom.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he is the total package. You get his defense out in center field, you get contact hitting, you get homers, you get pretty much everything from Sedalis. And slugging .873 on the season, .530 on base, and Jack, as you mentioned, .465 batting average. He is just one of many potent offensive players on this prop squad. And they maybe don't have the pitching depth that the softball team does, but they do have some arms as well. But this team, they are ran through their offense and through their bats.
Yeah, and speaking of potent, Doc, just let's talk about Dylan Maria for a second. 9 home runs, and that leads the team with 9 home runs. And he also leads the team with 33 RBIs. That's pretty potent in the middle of your lineup as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, this lineup, again, it's unfair. I mean, you mentioned Phil Sedalis, obviously, and Tom correctly described what he is to this team. He really is the total package. And I think the thing with him is, like, you thought last year was a breakout year, but he actually just broke out again. But you mentioned, again, Dylan Maria. I mean, he's a power hitter, right? I mean, he's almost up to 10 home runs as well. Tyler Cannon being the captain on the team. Jason Morgan, again, one of the better hitters in the conference, and he's like your 6-5-6 hole hitter. I mean, that's just it's unfair all the way down the lineup. Carson Harcourt has been a big player for them as well. You know, we didn't know what the catcher position would truly look like. We knew it would be him, but we didn't know how good he could possibly be in his first year getting consistent play time. And, I mean, he's hitting almost .300, doing a great job. And then all the way down the roster, I mean, they get contributions from everywhere. I mean, you know, even Nick Struble, you know, he's hitting over .300. Pat DeFiciani, you know, I think he's probably would want a better year for himself, but he's still, I still count on him as the year goes on. I think he's going to be somebody to look out for. Chris Serrano, he's very good defensively at shortstop. You know, Jason Schooley, again, a freshman, obviously brother of Anthony Schooley, who's, again, having a good year, hitting around .300. It's just like the softball team, right? I mean, it's talent in the pitching staff. It's talent when it comes to the lineup, and they're deep, and they're only going to get better. I mean, these bats are only going to get more comfortable, right? I mean, that's what we saw a lot last year. I mean, Jason Morgan, I think by this time last year was only hitting like hitting like a little under 300, which is a good year. But then he broke out. He got more comfortable with the squad, and he ended up having a great season, and he dominated when it came to postseason play. And I think there's a lot of players on this team we could see break out even as the season continues to go on.
And I'll ask this question to both of you because I remember asking it to you, Doc, in a prior Rowan Sports Review talking about the baseball team. I wanted to see who really filled in the shoes of Ryan Murphy, probably the best player on offense and arguably on the defensive side of things for the baseball team last year. I'll ask you both, who filled in the shoes this year so far for Ryan Murphy? I mean, I think it's Phil Sedalis because he has the great defense. He has the best batting average on the team with 6 homers, 25 RBIs. I think it's Phil Sedalis, but that our answer a month ago, Doc, was I think Tyler Cannon. Mm-hmm. And it's switched over to this narrative of Phil Sedalis, Tom.
And it has been Phil Sedalis with the 1403 OPS. He's just been an unbelievable player for this Profs team. But how about the job that Jason Morgan has done so far? 419 batting average, 464 on base, 608 slugging. Good for a 1072 OPS. As Doc mentioned, this lineup 1-9 is very deep. Joey Bogart, the freshman, at playing shortstop, he's hitting over 300, over 900 OPS as well. Obviously, Dylan Maria, we knew the power is going to be there with a player like him, but he's even outpaced his numbers last season. His numbers last season were elite. So this team, the big X factor, as Doc mentioned, Carson Harcourt, at the catcher position. He did miss some time with the injury, but now that he's back, it just feels like this team gives pitchers so many different nightmares. And even though against Kane last weekend, they kind of struggled, they got complete game shutout from Nolan Rowan, the pitcher for Kane, ironically enough named Rowan, threw a complete game shutout. They lost 1-0, but they were able to kind of work Jason Gillman, the lefty for Kane, in game two, and Carson Harcourt had that big two-run double. Anthony Schooley gave the Profs the lead. So this Profs team is very deep 1-9.
And even when it comes to pitching, I mean, the pitching looks really solid as well with Coluccio as well as Mike Shannon, both at around a 3 ERA, both with 3 wins and just above a 1 whip. So The pitching is really solid as well, and it's pretty much kind of just looking like the softball team, Doc.
Yeah, again, Mike Shannon, I luckily had an opportunity to play with him in Little League, and he was as good as
Wait, really?
Yeah, he was as good as he was back then than he is today, probably better because there's obviously better talent out there than me and myself. But it's just they have the pitching, which is obviously what we mentioned in the preseason when we did this, right? It was like, is the pitching going to be good enough? And I knew Mike Shannon was good, but, I mean, he's really coming into his own. I mean, he is looks like, again, a pitcher of the year, just like we talked about with Riley Lutz, Emily McCutchen. He's looking like one of the best pitchers in the NJAC. And then they also have, you know, guys coming out of the pen that Charlie Russell, who was a freshman last year, contributed just a little bit to them last year, is now stepping up into his own, getting a bigger role. Everybody's stepping up. I mean, Mike Shannon, though, is leading the way. Like, if you give Mike Shannon the ball and he takes the bump, you just got to get 3 runs. I mean, sadly, against Kane, they couldn't even get 1. He just needed 2, and they couldn't get 1. But that's still okay because Kane, again, is a top 25 team, I believe, now. They got votes in the poll before that, but I think in the most recent poll, they're now top 25, I want to say. But it's perfectly fine, but you know who Mike Shannon is. Big game against Kane. He allowed 1 run and like 3 hits.
You can't ask
for much more. Complete game. Should have been a complete game shutout. He allowed 3 hits, and sadly 2 of them came in the 1 inning, so that sometimes results in a run.
And for the baseball team, just like the softball team last year, they couldn't get over that NJAC tournament hump. They could not get the NJAC title that they were really looking for. And the baseball team last year, they made it all the way to the Super Regionals. But again, just like the softball team, got knocked out by Salisbury. The softball team, they lost to Salisbury in the College World Series to get eliminated from that. And the baseball team got eliminated from the Super Regionals by the number two Salisbury last year. Tom, how do they get over the NJAC hump, but also get an appearance back to that College World Series that they haven't seen in just a handful of years?
The ebbs and flows of a season, you're going to see the offense have some highs and have some lows, and even an offense as stacked as this Rowan squad. But one of the things that I would look for with this Profs team as to staying consistent is, can you get consistently get great starts out of any other pitcher not named Mike Shannon? Because as Doc mentioned, Mike Shannon has the makings of a pitcher of the year type of season with the way he's looked so far on the mound. But can Zach Coluccio, who has looked good so far this season,
he has looked really good,
be consistent moving forward for the Profs? Matt Choi as well, Jake Reese, who's going to be that next guy? Thomas Sullivan is another name. Mm-hmm. Who will be that next guy after Shannon who can anchor that rotation? Ideally, in all likelihood, it would be Coluccio, but if he stays consistent, then this Profs team is looking a lot better, because the Profs have some arms in the bullpen too that can get out, so they don't have to extend or overextend some of these starters. Jackson Kostya has looked okay. He's been used a lot. As Doc mentioned, Charlie Russell as well. And Sean Colbert has been a phenomenal closer for this team. When you give the ball to
ERA under one.
ERA under one. He has been absolutely electric. So it's very comfortable for head coach Mike Dixon when you have a pitcher like Shannon, the hitters in this lineup, and how complete your lineup is. And you can give the ball to Sean Colbert and you feel the game is essentially over.
I think also a big thing to look out for is Matt Choi played a big part in their season last year.
He did.
And this year, he's still good, but he's not getting as many starts as maybe you would assume. He's had two starts, has went 12 innings combined, with just a 1.5 ERA. And opponents are hitting just 143 off him. I mean, those are good numbers in two starts. And I wonder if, you know, towards the end of the year when games start getting closer to each other, there's less rest days, if we see him take the bump a little bit more and see if he can continue this great season, because just in two starts, I mean, he's looked phenomenal. And you mentioned Sean Colbert out of the pen, 10 innings pitched, 9 appearances, just allowed 1 run. I mean, it's gonna be tough to beat this team, especially when it's like a winner go home and you know Mike Shannon's in the game. You know they can bring in Sean Colbert at the end. You know Charlie Russell's, you know, in the pen if needed. I mean, even guys like Jake Reese, who were on the team last year, big contributions from them. It's going to be tough to beat this team when it's down to that one game, kind of like last year when they had Grace as their ace. Oh, I didn't realize that. Should use that last year. He's playing pro ball now, so shout out to him, but not to get off topic, but they're kind of like built similarly. It feels like their offense might even be a little bit better, especially if some of those younger players at the end of the lineup start coming into their own. I mean, This team's going to be hard to beat because their pitching is built for 9 innings. If they're a one-game setting, you need 9 innings, it's going to be hard to score.
Well said, guys. But that's going to do it for the Rowan Sports Review. For Aiden Dougherty, Tom Hill, I'm your host, Jack Miller. Thank you guys again for tuning into the Rowan Sports Review, and have a great rest of your Saturday.